In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser. Eusebius
Makaiser. I had a most amazing opportunity this past week where a mining company that blew me away, by the way, with their energy, the receptivity to difficult conversation, and the space they had opened up, had invited me as a speaker at the launch of the next phase of their diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy for the company. Now, I do a lot of this work. I often either facilitate workshops at various parts of the process. It could be part of the diagnostic, understanding the truth about that company, or I could be brought in after such work had been done by another company to help craft intervention and also to deliver the key insights to the leadership, which in itself can often be quite a difficult process to manage because, as you can imagine, obviously leadership, shareholders have internalized certain views about the company over which they lead. So these are very complicated, difficult, interesting conversations and work that happens in our workplaces and don't happen when they should be happening. Be that as it may, this mining company client of mine was absolutely brilliant, and I say that really from the bottom of my heart. So we had a productive conversation around justice in the workplace, which is my preferred framework. I understand DEI as an acronym and a framing that has become popular, and as I said in my talk, and I gave reasons, which is beyond the point of this short entry of In the Ring with Eusebius Makaiser today, why I prefer to talk about workplace justice and eliminating oppression rather than with the more familiar reference now the world over to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Always, without fail, the most potent, sometimes controversial questions come up right at the end of the Q&A. And there's a good reason for that. It can be very difficult to speak in a plenary session when your colleagues are there, bosses are there, managers are there. But also, you don't know the stranger that has just come into your midst. And the environment may not be psychologically feeling safe enough for you to voice a honestly held opinion that others might not share. A black woman, and that's relevant for a reason that will become apparent, put up a hand and said to me, Eusebius, we got to be careful, shouldn't we? And I want you to respond to this. We should be careful that even though we are trying to craft solutions that include more people and make the circle bigger and centers inclusivity or inclusiveness, that we don't end up unintentionally with a set of behaviors or actions or interventions that amount to, and she used the following phrase, which is really interesting and important, unconscious exclusion. And she said a little bit more, and she said, we do not want to unconsciously exclude those who previously were doing the oppressing. Otherwise, we are doing exactly the same. And it was an interesting question on its own terms, and in particular, coming from a woman and from a black woman and a young black woman at that, in the mining sector as well. And the reason I wanted to isolate that question and meditate on it a bit more is that in the context of this beautiful space that the mining company had set up, I did not have sufficient opportunity to really drill down into that question, to analyze it, to reflect on it, to engage it. I would have loved her to have the opportunity to respond to me, but the program had to move on. Firstly, I found it difficult to respond because I am profoundly aware of where power tends to be typically, not always, but typically located within corporates. there's a disproportionate amount of economic decision making and political power that men have. There is, even though this is a black leadership company, typically in many companies, particularly in this sector of the economy, white straight men who disproportionately wield a lot of power. And even if it's not necessarily at top leadership level, it can be de facto power as a result of the institutional history of the company that can long outlive nominal changes in the shareholdership of the company. And in that context, the last thing that I would want to do ethically and definitely politically is to respond in any kind of needlessly unproductive, let alone adversarial way to a black woman who puts up a hand and asks an honestly held question in terms of the sentiment that underlies it. So I was a little bit cautious and then I had to respond. I don't know what to feel. And I'm not so sure whether my response was the one that I really wanted. It was well received, but I think that's because the company was so generous. I mean, really, I think it's been a while. I had such an experience last year at a telecoms company where the atmosphere was just divine. And I can't wait to do more work with them. This company reminded me of that experience in terms of the generosity of spirit in the room. But on a personal level, because I hold myself to impossible standards, I've reflected on that moment, and I'm not so sure whether tonally, at the level of affect, I responded appropriately, because there was a lot of emotion in how I responded, and I'd asked permission explicitly to the room, and I said, can I get psychic permission to respond honestly and go into a space of comfortable discomfort so we can go there? And everyone said yes spontaneously. And I guess it's because of everything that had happened until that moment. But I still didn't feel like I was completely in control of a productive exchange with her. And I really hope that this entry will reach her. I'm going to try and make sure that that is the case. But here's why I'm sharing it with you. And I'm now going to get to the nub of the issue. I said verbatim, your question saddens me. And it really does. Because, you know, when oppressed groups simply ask for equality, and that's what I wanted to say, but I chose not to put it in those terms at the time. But when oppressed groups are simply asking for equality, that is often experienced by those who have been beneficiaries of inequality and injustice since day one as somehow a violent and unfair request on the part of oppressed groups. I don't know how we move from the demand for equality or equity to thinking that beneficiaries of oppression in the past are suddenly being poorly treated. I genuinely don't understand it. So I was sincere in my emotion and in my puzzlement and feeling saddened by the question. Because intellectually, practically, you don't need a degree to get the puzzle that I can't solve here. If I simply say to you, I would like you to treat me fairly so that we both get assessed by the same standards in the workplace, for example. How do we get from me asking for an equal opportunity, fair treatment, similar standards to be applied to my work as to the work of Meneer Kukumur? How do we get from that request to saying, please be careful that you are not going to oppress the person whose dad or granddad previously might have been part of the National Party architecture? I just don't see it. So we have to rid ourselves of this idea that work that we do that is aimed at making schools, universities, social clubs, sport clubs, public spaces, workplaces, places that celebrate diversity, equity, and inclusion as being about reverse discrimination. And I am intrigued by the language that she used, because it sounds like language that has come up in a workshop somewhere in another part of the building. Because there's something very precise, almost well-worn, about the words unconscious exclusion. And it reminds me of how often men respond in a knee-jerk manner when we do work aimed at girls to give girls opportunities they've never had. And then you will very quickly hear someone say, including women, by the way, don't leave the boy child behind. As if a journey aimed at making sure that girls finally have equal access to opportunity to flourish is anti-male. There's nothing about making sure we get rid of misogyny that is anti-male. There's nothing aimed at making sure we eliminate anti-black racism that is anti-white. The demand, and I come back to this insight, for equality is not a form of reverse oppression. So why that enters the room at that point remains a puzzle to me. And then the last thing that I wanted to say remains a puzzle to me, and I'm going to end on framing it as a puzzle, because I think you and I must find an opportunity for live engagement on this puzzle. In the meantime, you can sit with the puzzle. Is it wasn't the white man, straight white Afrikaans man, that asks me this question. It is always us, as members of minority groups or oppressed groups, that have this unreflective empathy that overruns in relation to members of the group that benefit from past oppression. There wasn't a white person in that room that thought that my messaging, or if they did, they certainly didn't say so, that the core part of my messaging was anti-white. I don't think there were many men in that room who thought that when I used gender analogies, that my message was fundamentally anti-male. I love men. trust me, my favorite part of being gay is the sheer joy of loving being with men, not just sexually, but physically and friendship-wise and camaraderie with men. I love men in all shapes, sizes, forms, and different relationship types. I love working with men creatively, intellectually. On my way now to a meeting with a man that I love working with. But somehow a request for equity often gets reduced to an agenda that is reverse discrimination. And we really need to sit with that myth and disentangle the two. Work that is aimed at inclusiveness, diversity, equity, or what I prefer to think of as justice, is not a form of reverse oppression.